This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Spread it out on third down. Daniels pulls the trigger, looking for the deep ball down the sideline, and it's hauled in. Dyami Brown, great snag.
Yep, on a play which we all know now, I think everybody knows, was not the play that was called. A bubble screen was called on third and six. Jaden didn't like that, and he had everybody go deep and threw a 42-yard pass to Dyami Brown. Ben Standing was there for the joint practice. He was there, and he's there every day. Was not at the game on Saturday, but certainly consumed it via television, as many of us did. And he joins us right now, as he will every Monday and Friday during the season and whenever we need him and he's available otherwise. Ben has a podcast, which is now called something different. And for Ben, is much better structured. It is called Last Man Standing. You can get that podcast anywhere you get a podcast. You can follow Ben on Twitter at Ben Standing, and you can read him in The Athletic like I do. And Ben just came out with another updated 53-man roster projection where there is intrigue at wide receiver. All right. Let's just go back to Saturday. Let's start with Jaden Daniels, 11 snaps, pretty good drive for the first one of the season, of the preseason. But give me your overall takeaways on him and the play in question that Dan Quinn suggested was not something that he was supposed to be allowed to do.
Yeah, well, first, thank you, of course, for having me. Thanks for mentioning the podcast. It is a new feed, so you do have to subscribe. Just letting people know that. All right.
Okay.
The play itself, like, I think it's fair to say, Kevin, that, like, I'm a fairly even-keeled guy. I don't try to get too high, too low, try to find the logic and all that kind of stuff. I don't know how you don't see that play and get very, very, very excited. Now, I'm not saying excited, like, book Canton. Like, it's all done. It's a wrap. He's the guy, Jaden Daniels. But what I am saying is that I think so much of what you got to look at when these players come into as a rookie, not just quarterbacks, any player, when you come up to the big league, you know what it means. You understand you're going up against the best of the best. The pressure mounts, the expectations, especially if you're a high pick, are pretty significant. And on his first drive, I know it's preseason, but his first drive, the first third down, he says, you know what? I'm going for the audible here. I'm checking to a different position, a different play. Clearly, whatever the instructions that Dan Quinn gave him were not, or Kingsbury, whomever, were not to do that based on the way Dan Quinn spoke about it. He did it anyway, and he obviously succeeded with a pinpoint pass for a 42-yard gain to Dyami Brown. The fact that he showed the chutzpah, the willingness, the daring to do it, that he wasn't afraid of the moment, that's something we've kind of – it's kind of felt watching him and being around him. He's got a pretty cool demeanor about him, meaning, like, he doesn't seem like – again, he gets too high or he gets too low or that anything seems to be bothering him on the outside at least. Then he does that in a game. I think that is a pretty special scenario. And, again, I'm not saying this means – they're going to win the Super Bowl this year or next year or anytime soon, or that he's going to be good or any of that. But you've got to start with the confidence. We see guys who don't have it. He does, at least as he does demonstrate it on that play. And to me, that made it incredibly exciting. And then Dan Quinn's reaction was fascinating, right? It was like we haven't had a ton in camp that felt, in terms of reaction from Quinn or others, that felt completely real. Everything's pretty positive or pretty basic. Here, this was Dad saying, you know, I don't use an analogy. He used the perfect one, the Top Gun analogy. You know, that, you know, Maverick is out there, you know, wanting to, you know, do something, and they tell him no, and he's like, yeah, okay, oh, cool, I'm going to do it anyway. As long as it's in check, I think this is a pretty fascinating deal and a really interesting look into the beginning of their relationship.
Yeah, I think the answer to this is obvious, but I want to hear what your answer is to it. And the question is, well, why did they not want him to check? I think the answer is pretty obvious based on the offensive line situation, but what would be your answer?
Yeah, that would be my guess. I mean, you know, I don't know. Maybe the training wheels were on. It's the preseason. It's not just about Jaden Daniels, right? It's not about winning. It's about, you know, whatever they're trying to accomplish here, assessing all the positions, obviously keep him healthy like you're inferring. So, yeah, I think that's probably a logical reason why. I don't think it's a suggestion that he's not equipped to do it. I think it's just, yeah, like you said, there's other variables, and the fact that the offensive line with, you know, two random players at tackle, including a guy who's typically a guard, that's not a place to necessarily experiment and take bigger risks, but he did it obviously anyway.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't want him to check into a pure dropback situation where there's more risk, especially when you're an empty set, you know, with five wides. The Jets fortunately only rushed four. They didn't send, you know, a blitzer off one edge and a blitzer off another. But he also, I think, probably knew he was going to have to unload it pretty quickly. I get your overarching kind of point, which is, you know, there are a lot of guys, you know, at this point where it's like high expectations, but you notice right from the jump, they're not totally sure of themselves yet. He hasn't had that issue. He doesn't get rattled by much, and he seems to be prepared and ready for the moment. And look, one of my callers said something earlier, which I thought was actually a really good point. Considering that the first throw, which was the play before that, a screen set up for Eckler, he sailed, you know, 3 feet over his head, which may have been an indication of just being a little bit tight. It was good to see him come back with the play that he had on the next play. What were your other big takeaways, both positive and negative, if you had any, from the game on Saturday?
Beyond Jaden, you know, I think, you know, it's always interesting to see who is playing and when they're playing, how long they're playing. You know, to see Jamin Davis and Fedarian Mathis in the game in the fourth quarter, you know, I think that's a sign of where they stand right now with the coaching staff, which is to say, it's not that they couldn't make the team, it's that they're getting, it's going to take a longer look for that to figure out that they are, you know, out there with guys that we're going to assume are going to be cut. So I think that's interesting, you know, watching Jamin, you know, I tried to focus on him a little bit with TV. There was those plays early on where we could all see him beat the tackle inside to get a hand on the running back two plays in a row to help make a tackle. But then when I was watching for the pass rush, you know, it's what I've seen in practice, just no real success there, very, you know, very raw with his plan, with his pass rush skills. And, you know, this is not surprising in that he's not done this before consistently with his hand in the dirt and so on. So you can see the development that's going to have to take place, and the question will be just how much is his new staff willing to do it with a guy who is, you know, in the last year of his rookie deal, and, you know, they have other players, right, at edge rusher that they can use instead, who already have a better feel. You know, KJ Henry, I thought, had you know, some good moments in the joint practice. You saw a little bit of that as well in the game. So that's an example of where Jamin Davis might be up against it. You know, Emmanuel Forbes obviously gave up the one touchdown pass, and, you know, as we know, defensive backs can, you know, it's sometimes hard to, you know, they've got one of the tougher jobs out there because of the rules and so on. And if you paid attention to the joint practice or saw clips online, you saw he was the guy often in coverage against Garrett Wilson and not winning those battles, that's one thing. Garrett Wilson's one of the best receivers. This was a quarterback and a receiver that are like third and fourth string on the Jets' depth. So, that's a little concerning. I still sort of wonder with Forbes how much of this is like we saw last year. He's not really a man corner. And I don't know how much – obviously, the coaching staff is not putting out their real plan. So I'm wondering, like, how much are they just showing something very basic that maybe is not ideally suited for him that would be different when they start playing. But nonetheless, he's still trying to, find his rhythm here at the NFL level. There's a lot of other things that are interesting. The fact that they had Zacchaeus out there as the first punt returner.
I was going to ask you about him.
Is notable. Yeah. That's notable to me. You know, the kick return, the guys they had back out there doing that were a lot of, like, guys who just may not even make the team, or maybe, Byron Pringle and whatever. But, like, the kick return is such a mystery right now that everybody's trying to figure out what to do with these new rules. And I imagine a lot of teams aren't still showing – they have to practice it, but I'm sure they're not showing, like, their grand plans. Whereas punt returner is pretty, pretty straightforward unless the new coordinator has – something he wants to do. So the fact that you put Zacchaeus out there says to me, this is a guy that's making our team. If he can win this job, if we think he can do it, then we don't have to burn a spot purely for the punt returner job. So I think that's notable, especially if there's a world they want to keep six receivers and keep up Bryce.
Well, it also probably spells the end of Jamison Crowder, right? I don't think there's a spot for both of them on the team. Do you agree or not?
I guess I should have said that. Yeah, I mean, to me, keeping Crowder is, I think Jamison Crowder could help you in a pinch at a receiver, but it's kind of burning a spot for the punt returner if you're keeping him. And, look, I think we all generally like Jamison Crowder, have fond feelings for him when he was here the first time, and nice guy, good for the locker room. And he was fine last year, but for all the people who complained about Dax Milne the year before, Jamison Crowder essentially put up the same exact stats. So they need more out of that spot. But they also don't want to burn a spot. And also, I would say, all things being equal for this team right now, for where they are in this development, keeping a guy, 30-plus, who's not a long-term play, really doesn't seem to make a ton of sense if he's not a main fixture, which Crowder wouldn't be. So, yeah, finding somebody else to do the punt returner would be a big deal. Zacchaeus is definitely going to make the team, and that would be interesting if he can do this. I have a question for you. You think this is interesting. I'm mentioning Zacchaeus. I think that he has been pretty good in practice so far, and I'm not remotely suggesting he's going to supplant Jahan Dotson in the lineup. But did you think it was weird that Jahan Dotson played the most snaps of any receiver for this team in this game, like over 30? That's very weird. Terry was out after 11. I think Zacchaeus was out there for 10. Jahan's been kind of up and down in camp. I just thought it was very odd. And it's not like Jaden Daniels. Jaden was out after one series, and so was Mariota. But I just thought it was odd that Dotson was out there that long. That's why I was curious what you think.
I don't know. I thought it was interesting to see Diami out there, and when he's out there, who's actually in their 11 personnel with three receivers, who's playing inside, whether it's Dotson or Terry. I think that would be interesting. You would know more than I on this. I didn't realize he played that many snaps. I do find it curious. I did notice him out on the field when others weren't out there anymore. I don't know what the answer to that is, but I've heard that they love him as a route runner, that they believe he's an exceptional route runner. I actually thought one of the interesting things was, and it's a name we've talked about before going back to last year, but Kaz Allen was back with Byron Pringle on kickoff returns. But beyond that, in the second quarter, they ran a reverse with Kaz Allen in the game. It got called back. There was a penalty, but he picked up about 11 yards. And I think that he's one of those interesting guys that the last staff was interested in his playmaking ability and his versatility. And it wouldn't surprise me if this staff is interested in it. I don't know if that means there's a spot on the roster. He'd have to be clearly one of the best of the kickoff returners. But if he were on the team, it'd be interesting to see if he'd actually be worked in to some of the offensive set schemes. Because he's awfully quick with the football in his hands. And he was on that reverse that they ran. You don't see that a lot in preseason, right? They clearly wanted to see the ball in his hands on that style of play.
Yeah, no, like you said, he was an explosive kick returner at UCLA. There was some hope last year that maybe he could be the guy, but you know, it didn't quite work out in preseason, or in training camp and preseason. So they kept him around. And Dan, you know, he is one of the players that after the first day of pads, Dan Quinn cited specifically. You wouldn't think the 5 foot nothing guy would be somebody that you would signal out as being competitive in the first day of pads, but he did. So you definitely have to pay attention. But it kind of goes back to the point of, well, how does that work? I don't know that he's going to be a player you're using on offense. So are you keeping him as a returner? It's fine if you do, but then you just have to, you know, then what else are you kind of giving up to do that? So, yeah, I mean, look, he and Pringle both had on the actual kick returns, had, you know, pretty good returns. And, you know,
yeah, Allen's, I think, was over 30 yards.
Yeah, one of them was about that. Yeah. So the idea that one of them could be the returner is not crazy, but again, it's like, okay, they're not probably making the team at the top six as a receiver straight on. So then what? So that'd be the only question. You know, guys like Dan Ristill and Noah Igbinogabe, at corner, they're guys who've been back there for kick returns in camp. They're making the team, I would think. So Dan Ristill is for sure, but could they be a guy that takes that? And then, you know, again, don't have to use the roster spot. We'll see. But yeah, I think Allen, I think it's a good point that they clearly showed a wanting to see him in different scenarios.
We're talking to Ben Standing. So you answer the question that you asked me. What do you think the reason for playing Jahan Dotson that many snaps was?
Well, I think Jahan he was starting off in camp pretty uneven, we'll just say. He just seems maybe didn't have the full confidence, and I don't know, something seemed off. But then the playbook, once they started doing more installs and adding the deep ball, things seemed to pick up. He said as much, that was a big reason as to why he thought he had done a little bit better. And look, the route running is still there. Like, you can see it in practice for sure. So that's not the issue. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, the standard line for the starters in week one game is get in and get out. And that's kind of what they did across the board. But he stayed at a position where every training camp, every team has like 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 guys. You're like, all right, maybe that guy's interesting enough. Let's see him. So I just thought that was curious that he was out there. I'm guessing they just wanted to try to get him in a little better rhythm. I don't know what else it could be. Again, when Terry's only out there for 11 snaps, Akias is only out there for 10. And, you know, again, most of the other starters that we would be thinking about in the same level of Dotson were not out there long. So, I don't know. I think it's a question if I have a chance to ask Dan Quinn about today. Again, he's on the team and surely starting, I would assume, and all that. But I think at least to me it showed that they're also like, hey, we got to help him maybe get in a rhythm a little bit.
Yeah, that's a. I'm interested to hear what his answer is too on that. On Dotson playing the most wide receiver snaps. So right now, and Ben put out a projected 53 man depth chart. Right, I think are you required to do it once a week? I think you are.
I was required to do this one. Yes.
Okay. So who do you have making the team at wide receiver?
Yeah, kind of what I said before. I had Terry, Jahan, Zacchaeus, Luke McCaffrey, Diami, and Bryson Tremaine as the last guy. You know, obviously Tremaine, you could see the one play. He had the one catch about 15, 16 yards that he made. And he's just been making plays down the field consistently all camp. He gives him a bigger target. He can help on special teams a bit. The question is just going to be what we just discussed. Where are the final roster spots coming from? Are you keeping a returner? Are you holding a third quarterback? Do you need, maybe a 10th offensive lineman because you're questioning what you have, et cetera? So I think that's where the numbers game still comes into play. But if what we're seeing on the field mirrors what the coaches are thinking, then I think Tremaine's got a pretty good shot to stay.
With respect to this coming week, the joint practice with Miami and then a preseason game Saturday night in Miami, You and we talked about this over the weekend, that we both thought there was a chance that whatever the plan was for Jaden, it would be dialed back a bit because of the offensive line issues. What if they have those same issues going into the second preseason game, which has been, in the years in which we've been down to three, the game in which teams play the starters the most? What do you think the plan will be if they are still thin along the offensive line?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. Like, this one, it wasn't like as big of a it wasn't going to be as big of a deal. Like, okay, right, sure, you know, maybe they the starter's only going to play a series probably anyway, and you can easily justify that. As long as they didn't kind of go three and out, which they didn't, you know, of course, because of the 42-yard pass, that, okay, you can probably get away with it. This time, you're right. I mean, if you said to me they were going to play the first half, I'd be like, okay, sure. I mean, that's conceivable. Not only is it's so much new coaching staff who still got to get used to their own rhythms, new team, new players, but of course the rookie quarterback. So I don't know. If you're telling me that it's the same deal of Trent Scott at left tackle and Chris Paul at right tackle, that doesn't bode too well in terms of keeping him out there long. Now, Cornelius Lucas, it looks like he had a family matter, and that's what kept him out of the game. So presumably he'll be out there, and you know, obviously he's a guy that's played for this team and in this league for a while, so that's a good sign. But the rest of it, I don't know. Dan Quinn, I thought one of the most important things that was said on Saturday was Dan Quinn saying that Brandon Coleman is dealing with a pec and a shoulder strain, and it's day-to-day, week-to-week. So,
yeah, he said day-to-day, week-to-week.
Who knows?
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously he's a pretty key figure for them. So this is not, you know, you don't want to rush it back for preseason. But on the other hand, if he's not out there, then and Andrew Wiley has basically not practiced almost at all at this point in camp. So yeah, they've got to get one of those guys back, I would think, to let you have Jaden Daniels play first half. Maybe Lucas and Scott is enough in their view. You know, Scott has been around the league; he just hasn't been a consistent player. So if they're comfortable with that, and then, you know, Allegretti, Biotish, Cosby, looks like those guys are good to go. So we're talking about missing maybe one of your projected starting five, but it's a notable one. So yeah, I think if they don't have it, you know, it's possible they have to dial it back even a bit more, but I'm sure they would like to get the offense out there for a fair amount of time because, you know, you only have so many opportunities, and we're going to assume they're not going to be out there for the third game.
I'm looking through my notes, and I don't think I mentioned this when I was going through the game. Who's number 40? He's like a safety slash, you know, linebacker.
Yeah, I think that's Tyler Owens.
Tyler Owens. What is his deal? Do they like him?
Yeah. So he, you know, when they gave out signing bonuses to undrafted free agents, I think the two that got the most attention were Sam Hartman and the cornerback out of Colorado State.
Yeah.
And Anusium. And okay, but there was another guy. Owens also got like over $200,000 signing bonus, which for that scenario was a pretty good deal. And he has been around the ball all summer. I mean, certainly in camp, I think he's been really noticeable. And, you know, again, when you're on like the third team, it's sometimes like, all right, well, who are you doing this against? But it's happening, you know, almost every practice, it feels like. You saw a little bit of it in the game. So, yeah, I think the question here is, you know, do they think, assuming that they, again, see this guy being worthy of discussion to make the team, do they think, A, he can slip through waivers to get to the practice squad since he was an undrafted free agent? Probably. Or do they say, you know what, going forward, we think this guy's a longer-term play than somebody else who's around. And that's where it gets sort of interesting. You know, Derek Forrest has been banged up for a few weeks. You know, this is just me wondering, you know, with the new rules, does Jeremy Reeves' special teams prowess mean as much? I don't know. So they've already got six guys that I would have thought were pretty, maybe Locke is overstating it, but, you know, feeling pretty confident they were good. And now Owens is another guy. So, yeah, they'll potentially have a really interesting decision there if he keeps us up and they see a guy that they think is worthy of keeping.
So I'm going to save kind of the nitpick, maybe controversial comment here for the very end. I want to get your thoughts on this, and I'm not suggesting, by the way, in any way that I believe that there's any substance to what I'm going to say. But in watching Tressway punt on Saturday, and he had several punts in the game. And then going back to last year, in which it was his worst year in a while. Now, he was not healthy. In fairness to him, he was not healthy last year. I am sort of surprised with a new regime that there's not a second punter in camp pushing him. Am I right or wrong?
Well, I don't know. Look, obviously, if we just look at the, purely look at the numbers, it was not one of his better years. And, he's obviously been doing this for a while.
It was his worst year since his very first few years. He was hurt, though. Give him that. He was not healthy.
Yeah. So it never really crossed my mind that they would do that. I guess it was more in my head of like, if I thought about it really at all, it was more like, if he doesn't look the part at all in camp, then, see what else is out there. But, it felt like, especially like once the Brandon McManus thing happened, kicker, and they were going to have to devote, multiple spots there, right? Because they thought they had a kicker. Now, all of a sudden, they're going to have to figure something else out. Maybe they were like, there's nothing to see here. Treshway is good. Not to mention all the other aspects, right? He's the holder, the locker room camaraderie, all that stuff. I'm sure, especially for what they're trying to build here, culture-wise, that's a guy you want to keep, right? So I would think that. Now, that said, over the last week, they have brought in various players at various positions for not tryouts, but supposedly they're going down their list of emergency players at different spots to see, hey, just in case, who are you, what's going on? And they did bring in multiple punters last week, and we were told just what I just said. Nothing to see here. We're just looking at the emergency list. So perhaps that's all it is. Maybe there is a little more to it. The fact that Treshway went to make a tackle in preseason.
Yeah, great play. His teammates were for him. And, all of that stuff is the intangible stuff. But just for anybody that was paying attention at all, and again, he was not 100% healthy at times last year, he was 27th in overall average, 25th in net punting in the NFL last year. It was not a good season for Treshway, who is, going to be 35 years old, or he's 34. I don't know when he turns 35. And I just, there are a lot of places that have more than one punter in camp, especially when you have new regimes. He's going to be the punter. I'm not saying that he's not going to be the punter. I'm just curious as to him coming off a poor year overall. And, he had a couple of good kicks Sunday, I guess. What about the regular kicker position? Patterson missed one.
I just think the week one kicker is probably still kicking somewhere else. I mean, somebody here just, one out, and we're not seeing that right now. In the joint practice, which, granted, was in rain, both guys missed a few kicks. They've been erratic a bit. I would say if you had to make me pick based on what they've done, Ahmed has probably been a little bit better, but Patterson's the one who's actually kicked in the NFL and has that experience. So, they'll keep at it. I'm positive they are still looking at – they're going to keep looking at the waiver wire to see – who comes up, and that may have to wait all the way until the very end of cuts. But, my guess would be that they're still going to grab somebody. But, both these guys will have a couple weeks still here to, get it right and try to be as consistent as possible and give reason as to why they should be the guy.
Yeah, and look, kickoffs are really important this year as well. The Jets are one of those one of the several teams with two kickers in camp. Siebert's, a guy that could be available on August 27th. Green Bay's got three kickers in camp, including Greg Joseph, who's been around for a while, not a great kicker in Minnesota. So I'm with you. I think ultimately the week one kicker at Tampa probably is not on the roster for them right now. All right. Anything else that you want to add?
Terrible timing for the game.
That was a delayed answer. What'd you say?
It was terrible timing for the game. I had to write during the U.S. The gold medal men's basketball game, so I had to go as I had to tune that out as best I could. I actually got spoiled by my own site when I filed my Commander story. On the back end of our site, I saw somebody filed a story on the gold medal win. But I still watch it. It was still very exciting. But, no, in terms of the rest of the Commanders, you know, look, I think they've played with some good energy, at least in terms of the guys that we're, you know, that we're going to be really focusing on this year who were out there not for very long. But I think that as much as we talk about plays and stats, you know, that aspect of it, the competitive aspect, you know, Joe Witt saying ball is life and all the things that maybe sound cliche, it could be in a high school football movie, but these things are very important to where this team is. They obviously last year, it was a rough ride mentally, and they've got to turn that around. And I think, you know, we've seen this all summer that I think they're doing that. And this was, you know, from a game perspective, the first time we got to see a little bit of that energy. So I think, I imagine Dan Quinn was happy with that. And now, you got to just, you know, keep that up, and then, you know, start fine-tuning the game plan and the roster.
Talk to you later in the week. Thanks, as always.
Yeah, man. See ya.
Ben Standing, everybody. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season, but this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Spread it out on third down. Daniels pulls the trigger, looking for the deep ball down the sideline, and it's hauled in. Dyami Brown, great snag.
Yep, on a play which we all know now, I think everybody knows, was not the play that was called. A bubble screen was called on third and six. Jaden didn't like that, and he had everybody go deep and threw a 42-yard pass to Dyami Brown. Ben Standing was there for the joint practice. He was there. And he's there every day. Was not at the game on Saturday, but certainly consumed it via television, as many of us did. And he joins us right now, as he will every Monday and Friday during the season and whenever we need him and he's available otherwise. Ben has a podcast, which is now called something different. And for Ben, is much better structured. It is called Last Man Standing. You can get that podcast anywhere you get a podcast. You can follow Ben on Twitter at Ben Standing, and you can read him in The Athletic like I do. And Ben just came out with another updated 53-man roster projection where there is intrigue at wide receiver. All right. Let's just go back to Saturday. Let's start with Jaden Daniels, 11 snaps, pretty good drive for the first one of the season, of the preseason. But give me your overall takeaways on him and the play in question that Dan Quinn suggested was not something that he was supposed to be allowed to do.
Yeah, well, at first, thank you, of course, for having me. Thanks for mentioning the podcast. It is a new feed, so you do have to subscribe. Just letting people know that. All right.
Okay.
The play itself, like, I think it's fair to say, Kevin, that, like, I'm a fairly even-keeled guy. I don't try to get too high, too low, try to find the logic and all that kind of stuff. I don't know how you don't see that play and get very, very, very excited. Now, I'm not saying excited, like, book Canton, like, it's all done, it's a wrap, he's the guy, Jaden Daniels. But what I am saying is that I think so much of what you got to look at when these players come into as a rookie, not just quarterbacks, any player, when you come up to the big league, you know what it means. You understand you're going up against the best of the best, the pressure mounts, the expectations, especially if you're a high pick, are pretty significant. And on his first drive, I know it's preseason, but his first drive, the first third down, he says, you know what? I'm going for the audible here. I'm checking to a different position, a different play. Clearly, whatever the instructions that Dan Quinn gave him were not, or, you know, or Kingsbury, whomever, were not to do that based on the way Dan Quinn spoke about it. He did it anyway, and he obviously succeeded with a pinpoint pass for a 42-yard gain to De'Ami Brown. The fact that he showed the chutzpah, the willingness, the daring to do it, that he wasn't afraid of the moment, that's something we've kind of, it's kind of felt watching him and being around him. He's got a pretty cool demeanor about him, meaning like he doesn't seem like, again, he gets too high or he gets too low or that anything seems to be bothering him on the outside at least. Then he does that in a game. I think that is a pretty special scenario. And again, I'm not saying this means they're going to win the Super Bowl this year or next year or anytime soon or that he's going to be good or any of that. But you've got to start with the confidence. We see guys who don't have it. He does. At least he does demonstrate it on that play. And to me, that made it incredibly exciting. And then Dan Quinn's reaction was fascinating, right? It was like we haven't had a ton in camp that felt, in terms of reaction from Quinn or others, that felt completely real. Everything's pretty positive or pretty basic. Here, this was Dad saying, you know, I don't need to use an analogy. He used the perfect one, the Top Gun analogy. You know, that, you know, Maverick is out there, you know, wanting to you know, do something, and they tell him no, and he's like, yeah, okay, cool, I'm going to do it anyway. As long as it's in check, I think this is a pretty fascinating deal and a really interesting look into the beginning of their relationship.
Yeah, I think the answer to this is obvious, but I want to hear what your answer is to it. And the question is, well, why did they not want him to check? I think the answer is pretty obvious based on the offensive line situation, but what would be your answer?
Yeah, that would be my guess. I mean, you know, I don't know. Maybe the training wheels were on. It's the preseason. It's not just about Jaden Daniels, right? It's not about winning. It's about, you know, whatever they're trying to accomplish here, assessing all the positions, obviously keep him healthy like you're inferring. So, yeah, I think that's probably a logical reason why. I don't think it's a suggestion that he's not equipped to do it. I think it's just, yeah, like you said, there's other variables, and the fact that the offensive line was, you know, two random players at tackle, including a guy who's typically a guard, that's not a place to necessarily experiment and take bigger risks, but he did it obviously anyway.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't want him to check into a pure dropback situation where there's more risk, especially when you're an empty set, you know, with five wides. The Jets fortunately only rushed four. They didn't send, you know, a blitzer off one edge and a blitzer off another. But he also, I think, probably knew he was going to have to unload it pretty quickly. But yeah, I get your overarching kind of point, which is, you know, there are a lot of guys, you know, at this point where it's like high expectations, but you notice right from the jump, they're not totally sure of themselves yet. He hasn't had that issue. He doesn't get rattled by much, and he seems to be prepared and ready for the moment. And look, one of my callers said something earlier, which I thought was actually a really good point, considering that the first throw, which was the play before that, a screen set up for Eckler, he sailed, you know, 3 feet over his head, which may have been an indication of just being a little bit tight. It was good to see him come back with the play that he had on the next play. What were your other big takeaways, both positive and negative, if you had any, from the game on Saturday?
Beyond Jaden, you know, I think, you know, it's always interesting to see who is playing and when they're playing, how long they're playing. You know, to see Jamin Davis and Fedarian Mathis in the game in the fourth quarter, you know, I think that's a sign of where they stand right now with the coaching staff, which is to say, it's not that they couldn't make the team, it's that they're getting, it's going to take a longer look for that to figure out that they are, you know, out there with guys that we're going to assume are going to be cut. So I think that's interesting. You know, watching Jamin, you know, I tried to focus on in on him a little bit with TV. There was those plays early on where we could all see him beat the tackle inside to get a hand on the running back two plays in a row to help make a tackle. But then when I was watching for the pass rush, you know, it's what I've seen in practice, just no real success there. Very, you know, very raw with his plan, with his pass rush skills. And, you know, this is not surprising in that he's not done this before consistently with his hand in the dirt and so on. So you can see the development that's going to have to take place. And the question will be just how much is his new staff willing to do it with a guy who is, you know, in the last year of his rookie deal. And, you know, they have other players, right, at edge rusher that they can use instead, who already have a better field deal. KJ Henry, I thought, had you know, some good moments in the joint practice. You saw a little bit of that as well in the game. So that's an example of where Jamin Davis might be up against it. Emmanuel Forbes obviously gave up the one touchdown pass, and you know, as we know, defensive backs can, you know, it's sometimes hard to, you know, they've got one of the tougher jobs out there because of the rules and so on. And if you paid attention to the joint practice or saw clips online, you saw he was the guy often in coverage against Garrett Wilson and not winning those battles. That's one thing. Garrett Wilson's one of the best receivers. This was a quarterback and a receiver that are like third and fourth string on the Jets' depth. So, that's a little concerning. I still sort of wonder with Forbes how much of this is, like, we saw last year he's not really a man corner. And I don't know how much, obviously the coaching staff is not putting out their real plan. So I'm wondering, like, how much are they just showing something very basic that maybe is not ideally suited for him that would be different when they start playing. But nonetheless, he's still trying to, you know, find his rhythm here at the NFL level. There's a lot of other things that are interesting. The fact that they had Zacchaeus out there as the first punt returner.
I was going to ask you about him.
Is notable. Yeah. That's notable to me. You know, the kick return, the guys they had back out there doing that were a lot of, like, guys who just may not even make the team, or maybe, you know, Byron Pringle and whatever. But, like, the kick return is such a mystery right now that everybody's trying to figure out what to do with these new rules. And I imagine a lot of teams aren't still showing. They have to practice it, but I'm sure they're not showing, like, their grand plans. Whereas punt returner is pretty, you know, pretty straightforward, unless the new coordinator has something he wants to do. So the fact that you put Zacchaeus out there says to me, this is a guy that's making our team. If he can win this job, if we think he can do it, then we don't have to burn a spot purely for the punt returner job. So I think that's notable, especially if there's a world they want to keep six receivers and keep up Bryce.
Well, it also probably spells the end of Jamison Crowder, right? I don't think there's a spot for both of them on the team. Do you agree or not?
Yeah, no, that's kind of, I guess I should have said that. Yeah, I mean, to me, keeping Crowder is, you know, look, I think Jamison Crowder could help you in a pinch hit receiver, but it's kind of burning a spot for the punt returner if you're keeping him. And look, I think we all generally like Jamison Crowder, have fond feelings for him when he was here the first time, and nice guy, good for the locker room. And he was fine last year, but for all the people who complained about Dax Milne the year before, Jamison Crowder essentially put up the same exact stats. So they need more out of that spot. But they also don't want to burn a spot. And also, like I would say, all things being equal for this team right now, for where they are in this development, keeping a guy, you know, 30-plus who's not a long-term play really doesn't seem to make a ton of sense if he's not a main fixture, which Crowder wouldn't be. So, yeah, finding somebody else to do the punt returner would be a big deal. Zacchaeus is definitely going to make the team, and that would be interesting if he can do this. I have a question for you. You think this is interesting. I'm mentioning Zacchaeus. I think that he has been pretty good in practice so far, and I'm not remotely suggesting he's going to supplant Jahan Dotson in the lineup. But do you think it was weird that Jahan Dotson played the most snaps of any receiver for this team in this game, like over 30? That's very weird. Terry was out after 11. I think Zacchaeus was out there for 10. Jahan's been kind of up and down in camp. I just thought it was very odd. And it's not like Jaden was out after one series, and so was Mariota. But I just thought it was odd that Dotson was out there that long. Or maybe, you know, that's why I'm just curious what you think.
I don't know. I thought it was interesting to see Diami out there, and when he's out there, who's actually in their 11 personnel with three receivers, who's playing inside, you know, whether it's Dotson or Terry. You know, I think that would be interesting. You would know more than I on this. I didn't realize he played that many snaps. I do find it curious. I did notice him out on the field when others weren't out there anymore. I don't know what the answer to that is, but I've heard that they love him as a route runner, that they believe he's an exceptional route runner. I actually thought one of the interesting things was, And it's a name we've talked about before going back to last year. But Kaz Allen was back with Byron Pringle on kickoff returns. But beyond that, in the second quarter, they ran a reverse with Kaz Allen in the game. It got called back. There was a penalty, but he picked up about 11 yards. And I think that he's one of those interesting guys that the last staff was interested in his playmaking ability and his versatility. And it wouldn't surprise me if this staff is interested in it. I don't know if that means there's a spot on the roster. He'd have to be, you know, clearly one of the best of the kickoff returners. But if he were on the team, it'd be interesting to see if he'd actually be worked in to some of the offensive set schemes, because he's awfully quick with the football in his hands, and he was on that reverse that they ran. You don't see that a lot in preseason, right? They clearly wanted to see the ball in his hands on that style of play.
Yeah, no, like you said, he was an explosive kick returner at UCLA. There was some hope last year that maybe he could be the guy, but you know, it didn't quite work out in preseason, or in training camp and preseason. So they kept him around. And Dan, you know, he is one of the players that after the first day of pads, Dan Quinn cited specifically. You wouldn't
remember
think
that
the 5 foot. You wouldn't think the 5 foot nothing guy would be somebody that you would signal out as being competitive in the first day of pads, but he did. So you definitely have to pay attention, but it kind of goes back to the point of, well, how does that work? I don't know that he's going to be a player you're using on offense. So are you keeping him as a returner? It's fine if you do, but then you just have to, you know, then what else are you kind of giving up to do that? So, yeah, I mean, look, he and Pringle both had on the actual kick returns, had, you know, pretty good returns. And, you know,
yeah, Allen's, I think, was over 30 yards.
Yeah. Yeah, one of them was about that. Yeah, so the idea that one of them could be the returner is not crazy, but again, it's like, okay, they're not probably making the team at the top six as a receiver straight on, so then what? So that'd be the only question. You know, guys like Dan Ristill and Noah Igbinogheby, at corner, they're guys who've been back there for kick returns in camp. They're making the team, I would think. So Dan Ristill is for sure, but, you know, could they be a guy that takes that, and then you know, again, don't have to use a roster spot? We'll see. But yeah, I think Allen, I think it's a good point that they clearly show that a wanting to see him in different scenarios.
We're talking to Ben Standing. So you answer the question that you asked me. What do you think the reason for playing Jahan Dotson that many snaps was?
Well, I think Jahan he was starting off in camp pretty uneven, we'll just say. He just seems maybe didn't have the full confidence, and I don't know, something seemed off. But then the playbook, once they started doing more installs and adding the deep ball, things seemed to pick up. He said as much, that was a big reason as to why he thought he had done a little bit better. And look, the route running is still there. Like, you can see it in practice for sure. So that's not the issue. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, the standard line for the starters in week one game is get in and get out. And that's kind of what they did across the board. But he stayed at a position where every training camp, every team has like 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 guys. You're like, all right, maybe that guy's interesting enough. Let's see him. So I just thought that was curious that he was out there. I'm guessing they just wanted to try to get him in a little better rhythm. I don't know what else it could be. Again, when Terry's only out there for 11 snaps, Akias is only out there for 10. And, you know, again, most of the other starters of that we would be thinking about at the same level of Dotson were not out there long. So, I don't know. I think it's a question if I have a chance to ask Dan Quinn about today. Again, he's on the team and surely starting, I would assume, and all that. But I think at least to me it showed that they're also like, hey, we got to help him maybe get in the rhythm a little bit.
Yeah, that's I'm interested to hear what his answer is too on that, Dotson playing the most wide receiver snaps. So right now, and Ben put out a projected 53-man depth chart, right? I think are you required to do it once a week? I think you are.
I was required to do this one, yes.
Okay. So who do you have making the team at wide receiver?
Yeah, kind of what I said before. I had Terry, Jahan, Zacchaeus, Luke McCaffrey, Diami, and Bryson Tremaine as the last guy. You know, obviously Tremaine, you could see the one play, he had the one catch about 15, 16 yards that he made, and he's just been making plays down the field consistently all camp. He gives him a bigger target. He can help on special teams a bit. The question is just going to be what we just discussed. Where are the final roster spots coming from? Are you keeping a returner? Are you holding a third quarterback? Do you need, maybe a 10th offensive lineman because you're questioning what you have, et cetera? So I think that's where the numbers game still comes into play. But if what we're seeing on the field mirrors what the coaches are thinking, then I think Tremaine's got a pretty good shot to stay.
With respect to this coming week, the joint practice with Miami and then a preseason game Saturday night in Miami, you and I talked about this over the weekend that we both thought there was a chance that whatever the plan was for Jaden, it would be dialed back a bit because of the offensive line issues. What if they have those same issues going into the second preseason game, which has been, in the years in which we've been down to three, the game in which teams play the starters the most? What do you think the plan will be if they are still thin along the offensive line?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. Like, this one, it wasn't going to be as big of a deal. Like, okay, right. Sure, maybe the starter's only going to play a series probably anyway, and you can easily justify that. As long as they didn't kind of go three and out, which they didn't, of course, because of the 42-yard pass, that, okay, you can probably get away with it. This time, you're right. I mean, if you said to me they were going to play the first half, I'd be like, okay, sure. I mean, that's conceivable. Not only is it's so much new coaching staff who still got to get used to their own rhythms, new team, new players, but of course the rookie quarterback. So I don't know. If you're telling me that it's the same deal of Trent Scott at left tackle and Chris Paul at right tackle, that doesn't bode too well in terms of keeping him out there long. Now, Cornelius Lucas, it looks like he had a family matter, and that's what kept him out of the game. So presumably he'll be out there, and obviously he's a guy that's played for this team and in this league for a while, so that's a good sign. But the rest of it, I don't know. Dan Quinn, I thought one of the most important things that was said on Saturday with Dan Quinn saying that Brandon Coleman is dealing with a pec and a shoulder strain, and it's day-to-day, week-to-week. So,
yeah, he's a day-to-day, week-to-week. Who knows? Yeah.
So, obviously he's a pretty key figure for them. So this is not, you don't want to rush it back for preseason. But on the other hand, if he's not out there, then and Andrew Wiley has basically not practiced almost at all at this point in camp. So yeah, they've got to get one of those guys back, I would think, to let you have Jaden Daniels play first half. Maybe Lucas and Scott is enough in their view. Scott has been around the league; he just hasn't been a consistent player. So if they're comfortable with that, and then Allegretti, Biotis, Cosby, looks like those guys are good to go. So we're talking about missing maybe one of your projected starting five, but it's a notable one. I think if they don't have it, it's possible they have to dial it back even a bit more, but I'm sure they would like to get the offense out there for a fair amount of time because, you only have so many opportunities, and we're going to assume they're not going to be out there for the third game.
I'm looking through my notes, and I don't think I mentioned this when I was going through the game. Who's number 40? He's like a safety slash, linebacker.
Yeah, I think that's Tyler Owens.
Tyler Owens. What is his deal? Do they like him?
Yeah. So he, when they gave out signing bonuses to undrafted free agents, I think the two that got the most attention were Sam Hartman and the cornerback out of Colorado State.
Yeah.
Anusium. And okay, but there was another guy. Owens also got over $200,000 signing bonus, which for that scenario was a pretty good deal. And he has been around the ball all summer. I mean, certainly in camp, I think he's been really noticeable. And, again, when you're on the third team, it's sometimes like, all right, well, who are you doing this against? But it's happening almost every practice, it feels like. You saw a little bit of it in the game. So, yeah, I think the question here is, do they think, assuming that they, again, see this guy being worthy of discussion to make the team, do they think, A, he can slip through waivers to get to the practice squad since he was an undrafted free agent? Probably. Or do they say, going forward, we think this guy's a longer-term play than somebody else who's around. And that's where it gets sort of interesting. You know, Derek Forrest has been banged up for a few weeks. This is just me wondering, you know, with the new rules, does Jeremy Reeves' special teams prowess mean as much? I don't know. So they've already got six guys that I would have thought were pretty – maybe Locke is overstating it, but, you know, feeling pretty confident they were good, and now Owens is another guy. So, they'll potentially have a really interesting decision there if he keeps this up and they see a guy that they think is worthy of keeping.
So I'm going to save kind of the nitpick, maybe controversial comment here for the very end. I want to get your thoughts on this, and I'm not suggesting, by the way, in any way that I believe that there's any substance to what I'm going to say. But in watching Tressway punt on Saturday, and he had several punts in the game, and then going back to last year, in which it was his worst year in a while. Now, he was not healthy. In fairness to him, he was not healthy last year. I am sort of surprised with a new regime that there's not a second punter in camp pushing him. Am I right or wrong?
Well, I don't know. I mean, look, obviously, if we just look at look at the numbers, it was not one of his better years. And, you know, he's obviously been doing this for a while.
It was his worst year since his very first few years. He was hurt, though. Give him that. He was not healthy.
Yeah. So it never really crossed my mind that they would do that. I guess it was more in my head of, like, if I thought about it really at all, it was more like, if he doesn't look the part at all in camp, then, you know, see what else is out there. But, like, it felt like, you know, especially once the Brandon McManus thing happened, kicker, and they were going to have to devote, you know, multiple spots there, right? Because they thought they had a kicker. Now, all of a sudden, they're going to have to figure something else out. Maybe they were like, there's nothing to see here. Tressway is good. Not to mention all the other aspects, right? He's the holder, the locker room camaraderie, all that stuff. I'm sure, like, especially for what they're trying to build here, culture-wise, that's a guy you want to keep, right? So I would think that. Now, that said, over the last week, they have brought in various players at various positions for not tryouts, but just like supposedly they're going down their list of emergency players at different spots to see, hey, just in case, who are you? What's going on? And they did bring in multiple punters last week, and we were told, that's what I just said. Nothing to see here. We're just looking at the emergency list. So perhaps that's all it is. Maybe there is a little more to it. The fact that Tressway went to make a tackle in preseason.
Yeah, great play. His teammates were for him. And, you know, all of that stuff is the intangible stuff. But just for anybody that was paying attention at all, and again, he was not 100% healthy at times last year, he was 27th in overall average, 25th in net punting in the NFL last year. It was not a good season for Tressway, who is, you know, going to be 35 years old, or he's 34. I don't know when he turns 35. And I just, you know, there are a lot of places that have more than one punter in camp, especially when you have new regimes. He's going to be the punter. I'm not saying that he's not going to be the punter. I'm just curious as to him coming off a poor year overall. And, you know, he had a couple of good kicks Sunday, I guess. What about the regular kicker position? Patterson missed one.
Yeah, I have been stating I just think the week one kicker is probably still kicking somewhere else. I mean, somebody here just, you know, one out, and we're not seeing that right now. In the joint practice, which, granted, was in rain, both guys missed a few kicks. You know, they've been erratic a bit. I would say if you had to make me pick based on what they've done, Ahmed has probably been a little bit better, but Patterson's the one who's actually kicked in the NFL and has that experience. So, you know, they'll keep at it. I'm positive they are still looking at the waiver wire to see who comes up, and that may have to wait all the way until the very end of cuts. But, my guess would be that they're still going to grab somebody. But, you know, both these guys will have a couple weeks still here to, get it right and try to be as consistent as possible and give reason as to why they should be the guy.
Yeah, and look, kickoffs are really important this year as well. You know, the Jets are one of those one of the several teams with two kickers in camp. Siebert's, you know, a guy that could be available on August 27th. Green Bay's got three kickers in camp, including Greg Joseph, who's been around for a while, not a great kicker in Minnesota. So I'm with you. I think ultimately the week one kicker at Tampa probably is not on the roster for them right now. All right. Anything else that you want to add?
Terrible timing for the game.
That was
a
delayed answer. What'd you say?
It was terrible timing for the game. I had to write during the U.S. The gold medal men's basketball game, so I had to like go as I had to tune that out as best I could. I actually got spoiled by my own site when I filed my commander story. On the back end of our site, I saw somebody filed a story on the gold medal win, but I still watched it. It was still very exciting. But no, in terms of the rest of the Commanders, you know, look, I think they've played with some good energy, at least in terms of the guys that we're, you know, that we're going to be really focusing on this year who were out there not for very long. But I think that as much as we talk about plays and stats, you know, that aspect of it, the competitive aspect, you know, Joe Witt saying ball is life and all the things that maybe sound cliche, it could be in a high school football movie, but these things are very important to where this team is. They obviously last year, it was a rough ride mentally, and they've got to turn that around. And I think, you know, we've seen this all summer that I think they're doing that. And this was, you know, from a game perspective, the first time we got to see a little bit of that energy. So I think, I imagine Dan Quinn was happy with that. And now, yeah, you got to just, you know, keep that up, and then, you know, start fine-tuning the game plan and the roster.
Talk to you later in the week. Thanks, as always.
Yeah, man. See ya.
Ben Standing, everybody. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.